Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh-Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable.
And so we can enter your credit card information manually, do it as a donation, but you will receive your book tonight. So any of you who would like to pay that way, afterwards we will be around to assist you with that. And if you're more comfortable typing in your own numbers, that's absolutely fine. Alice, are you ready to proceed?
I'm ready when you're ready.
All right. We would like to kick off our second act with George W. Wolfe reading The First Dawn.
Thank you. This is my first time at this event. I'm so delighted to be here and meet everybody and hear this excellent writers. I'm humbled that I was even asked to be here. This poem I'm going to read is from my only poetry book called Clapping with One Hand. A poem inspired by Zen, Mozart, and my experience in India. And so I'll be reading the poem The First Dawn from this particular book. If I slur my speech tonight, it's not because of my age, it's because of the wine. Anyways, years ago I got interested in this idea of unified consciousness. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's a kind of a spiritual thing. And it's the idea that you perceive opposite values as being united or existing in a state of oneness. Albert Einstein, I was told once, said that it is a theory of relativity. He asked the question, how can an object be both at rest and in motion at the same time? Okay, and I see rationally that question doesn't make sense in a Newtonian universe, right? Either an object's in motion or it's not. Can't have it both ways. But Einstein was able to ask that question because apparently he was coming from a state of unified consciousness at that moment. And that led apparently to, was one of the mind games he played, leading to his theory of relativity. There's a passage in the Gospel of Thomas which reads, when the inner becomes the outer, and when the outer becomes the inner, when the higher becomes the lower, and the lower becomes the higher, when male and female are brought together in a single self, then you'll enter the kingdom of God. That's in the Gospel of Thomas. Well, that's an example of this idea of unified consciousness. I became intrigued by that, and I realized that children, as infants, were really born in a state of unified consciousness. Prior to having the awakening to self-awareness, the child thinks, doesn't know the difference between the hand and himself, or the mother and themselves, and so forth. And then they have that awakening to self-awareness, and all of a sudden they see the difference. Well, I became intrigued with my infant daughter when she would have that experience of awakening to self-awareness. And so I wrote this poem inspired by that idea. One thing, every once in a while, it doesn't happen very often, but every once in a while I do come out with a funny line. And there's a line in here, it goes to caffeine-faced clerk, okay? We were strolling into a convenience store like 8 in the morning, and there was a guy behind the counter. He looked like he had 5 cups of coffee, and he still wasn't awake. So that's what I'm referring to. When I read that. She awakens at 6 a.m., less than 7 months old, reaching for the goldfinch that flew out of her dream. There she lies, laughing with the sun, as if to know creation's riddle. She never feels funny about clapping with one hand. We stroll to the convenience store where her smile is heard above the radio. Even the caffeine-faced clerk responds, thawing his lips enough to break up the freeze-dried look in his eyes. Life is simple now. No shoes to tie, no teeth to brush, no sins to repent, no dualities to wrestle. Day and night are but theaters for different dreams, personal identity, and eternal and enduring myth. I am everything, she exclaims with featherweight eyes. But today, something changed. Now she looks, still smiles, but sees the distance between us.
Next, please welcome the excellent Jenny Calahar with Into Position.
Jenny, one of our special award winners. Woo!
Into Position. You position me each night for dreams, white pillows a certain height for neck. Familiar blanket on or off, or fought over playfully or roughly. Black darkness demanded, or hall light allowed to yellow under the door. Silence as soundtrack, or spousal breathing, or rain pounding grayly on windows. A position, a habit, a custom, or prayer, and weight on your back or stomach, or side, nude or pajamas or gown, holding a hand or letting your arms relax into their usual poses. The dog's spine curved against your own. You breathe in unison with the room's occupants or lie alone, hearing the hairs in your ears violin, or lie alone, feeling no movement on the mattress as no one rises the last time after the bedroom light was doused. Alone or accompanied, you wait, slipping deeper, bracing or longing for dreams, or enduring until they can be forgotten at dawn. Smiling at the still sleeping dog sharing your pillow, or at kind eyes just opening nearby, or frowning at nothing and no one, you leave the mark behind, adjusting blood flow, cold feet hanging over the edge, remembering a wave of obligations, remembering what is real, fading dreams detangling through the colorless comb you inherited. Or clouding the mirror as you brush your teeth, spitting away the last minty or tasteless or appalling remnants of the night. You inhale wakefulness, positioning for the day to come.
It's called Zombies Can't Open Doors. It's by Michelle Payne, who goes by Mish, and so it's going to be presented by Mish and Lori Dyer. So do you want a second microphone, or do you want to just,
I am a coffee addict, a night owl, and a word nerd. But as a lifelong word nerd that I am, I have to say I'm quite proud when I see shades of the same within my two children, whom I call the precious pair. Nothing has stirred this pride in me more than a recent car conversation with my youngest. My 10-year-old's analogy was a true original, and ever since she mentioned it, I can't stop thinking about it.
Well, you know how zombies can't open doors.
She asked me this matter-of-factly, as if everyone should know it already. No, I guess I never realized that. But it makes sense. Their arms aren't really functional since they're dried up and dead, right?
Right. So think about it all. All of us are zombies when it comes to someone else's heart.
Okay, how do you mean?
We are all zombies because we can't open the door to anyone's heart, unless it's our very own heart door to open. The zombies are my family and friends. They can lean and push against the door to my heart, but only I can decide to let them in.
Mind blown. Wow, I guess you're right. That's a pretty fantastic analogy.
Yes, and happy people let the zombies in. Unhappy people have a harder time letting them in, which is a little sad.
I agree. I'm glad that people like you and me let a lot of people, I mean zombies, into our hearts.
Me too, Mama.
This recent exchange has led me to think deeply about the past year of my life and several different doors I've been leaning on and pushing on like a zombie. Personal relationships, career challenges, legal struggles, and real estate transactions all included. The past 10 months have beaten me up on many days, but as in the analogy, a zombie doesn't feel pain. Maybe that's why I keep pushing on some impossible to open doors so hard. I'm not allowing myself to feel the pain. That is, until one of the doorkeepers opens their door a tiny crack to say, "This one is not going to open for you, so why make a fool of yourself trying?" Then reality sets in. I'm not a zombie after all. I'm a living, breathing, feeling, flawed, and yes, sometimes foolish human being. And I've encountered my fair share of door slamming lately. What do I mean? People whom I wish would heal, who aren't ready to heal. Promotions I've gone for that I'm not going to get. Employees I want to hire with no budget to do so, the quiet cubicle I need that's still 1 year away in the blueprint, the price I ask for my house that no one is willing to pay, my moving date that keeps moving, a clear view of my future that appears only as a fogged mirror. Wow, that's quite a list. Yet this list is life, rejection, uncertainty, instability, disappointment, and failure. Sometimes we zombies need to take a step away from the locked doors to find different ones. Look for glass doors you can see into, screen doors you can feel the morning breeze through, colorful painted doors that welcome you, automated doors with that silver button on the wall. Even a zombie can lean against that button and open that door. Find your doors, the ones that are meant and made just for you, the ones that joyfully fly open when they see you coming. These deep thoughts were sponsored by my daughter, the little analogy genius. I will encourage her to keep up with her word nerding along with her number nerding. In fact, I hope she keeps on nerding in general because we're going to need her and all the other young smart ones when the real zombies invade Noblesville.
Next up, Ms. Marlene Million is going to read her poem, Sunrise. It's a poem that is after Monet's impression, Sunrise, 1872. And I gotta tell you, Marlene, when you read this poem, I can see that painting. That's a job well done. What a minute.
Sunrise. After Monet's impression, Sunrise. 1872. The pre-dawn hush heralds promise of your presence. You whisper good night to Sister Moon. Morning haze hovers over your reflection, mirrored a dusty orange. Your tip of brightness shimmers, sparkles a zigzag path atop water. The harbor, misty with dew, blurs with shyness. The sky cradles buoyant energy at your command. Master of ceremonies, such humble regard awaits your rising. Ships, masts, dockside cranes, your captive audience pay homage. Factories and ships stand as sentinels in respect. The anchor pulls free and the vessel floats towards the horizon, guided by your faint light. There is pause when you touch the heart of day. Thank you.
All right, please welcome Chuck Kellum, who will be reading an untitled haiku.
Preface this by saying I'm not entirely certain that it actually is a haiku. About a year and a half ago, I got involved online with some people who have been discussing, exploring, learning a little bit about haiku experimenting, and we decided early on that there were too many rules that were ambiguous about haiku, and I've accumulated about 50 little poems in this style that I'm planning to make a book called Not All Haiku Is. So Alice said I could talk a little bit about my process. I'm a pretty haphazard poet. I don't set aside time for writing. I just go when I'm inspired. And the last 2 years, I bought the Folk Street Review, and this year I realized that I could pay the entry fee for the same price I've been paying to buy the book. So why not pay the entry fee and try to get in? So I submitted a couple of things, and the first poem I did was called Sunrise. Real original. I was just hung up on, couldn't think of anything but sunrise. It really bothered me that that's all I could think about. I thought there's a lot more to sunrise than just the sun coming up. So that's where this idea came from. I watch the sun set. Half a world away, others see it coming up.
And next, December Sunrise, Noblesville, by Laurie Cates Hand.
Hello, I just want to start by saying that I'm really honored to be here among so many talented and creative people. I feel a little bit of imposter syndrome going on right now. I spent the last 29 years fixing other people's writing as a book editor, and I have not been able to ignite my own creativity and write for myself because I spend all day working on other people's writing. In the last days of 2019, I saw the call for submissions and remembered a photo that I had recently taken the day after my birthday, and I thought how it would fit with the theme of sunrise, and I decided to submit it and a short personal essay to go along with it. And it was kind of like when I was in fourth grade, when one of my teachers would give us a prompt, a writing prompt, and I would get all inspired and excited, and I would start writing, and all the other kids around me would look at me like I was weird. And I felt inspired again for the first time in a long time, so I enthusiastically wrote this little essay, and I am surprised and delighted to have been chosen. The photo is on page 93 of the book. I didn't manage to get the printout, but if you want to see the photo, it's on 93. The world is heavy on my shoulders these days. My father has recently been moved to memory care, and it's a difficult, if not unthinkable, adjustment. I'm losing faith in the goodness of human nature, and I'm watching everything and everyone I always took for granted slipping away. It's a wonder to me how I managed to keep going, but I do. The morning after my birthday, I rose before dawn, showered, dressed, and went downstairs to the kitchen to wait for my daughter to be ready for me to drive her to the high school on my way to work. As usual, I was making the most of waiting by unloading and loading the dishwasher and starting a load of laundry. Suddenly, I was arrested by the moment of sunrise outside my kitchen window. The stunning palette jolted me out of my routine. I shrugged into my down jacket, slipped on my shoes, and hurried out to the frosty backyard to catch this shot on my phone. Taking time to be present in that moment recharged me enough to take on another day.
We're going to going to have Simona Buna present her artwork, talk about her art a little bit. Simona's got some pieces over here, the Roosters, the Blue City piece. That's probably not the name of that one, because Blue City is in the book, and this, that piece sold, so this is, you'll talk about it.
You talk about it.
This one,
that's the hard part of the talk.
This is the one that's in the book.
Yes.
The little rooster is the one that's in the book, and I just think it's fabulous.
How I say, this is the hardest part for me to talk.
It's
my accent. So years ago, when we were not, me and my family, we were not U.S. citizens, we had to go to Chicago to deal with some papers at the consulate. So we left Novosibirsk. It was sometime in March, pretty nice weather, just right to not take the big coat on. And guess what? We went to Chicago, it was 7 in the morning. It was freezing. It was sunny and nice and freezing. So every time I think about Chicago, even if it's 100 degrees outside there, it will be like that. Or like the other paintings that I did, and it's in a book in the page 26, and it would be gloomy and freezing and blue. So
that one,
so in Romania, we had really nice flowers in the gardens, almost everywhere in the countryside. But if you have to go to somewhere and give them some flowers, you had to go and buy them. Guess what? We didn't have too many in the stores. They were only carnations everywhere. And this was inspired by my 18th birthday, when somebody gifted me some carnations, and I was so excited. And I remember I woke up in the next morning, and they were on my table in my room with the sun coming on them. So that's the inspiration for that one. The rooster, I was in the countryside, we had animals, we had chickens and roosters and everything, and this was really a nice sound to hear the rooster in the morning, you know, and have that feeling of rustling, that the life starts to come there, you know. Everything that I paint, I try to paint from my memory, or even if I'm have an inspiration from nature or from what is in front of me, I add something from my memory, or what I lived, or what I saw when I was a child, or when I was growing up, or, you know, what I experienced. So, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Talk about stuff. Oh my goodness. Okay. Next up, Gene Roberts is going to, I believe, a cappella style with a shake-a-shake-a-shake-a, sing the song lyrics that she submitted called Old Wives and Old Husbands. So, Gene, come on up.
I'd like to hold it in my left shirt. Sure. I think. Actually, I'm not sure. Maybe I can stay on mic. Well, this is just a little portrait study of some old couples that I've been observing. And as our whole population is aging, we see them around us all the time. So, and this is a little shaker my husband made for me to accompany myself. Old wives and old husbands, and old women and old men. We've been together for a lifetime, be together till the end. But she's afraid to be without him at the end of life alone. So even though it's ragged, that's why we go on and on. 2, 3, 4. You know he always leaves the cap off, so she always spills the juice. His nose and ears keep getting longer, but he hears and smells much worse. And if he's a glass of water, well then she's a glass of wine. Like a rose bush with the flowers gone, but the forest still on the vine. Grumpy and Frumpy, they arrive together. Here come Toad and Frog, they're rat and shrew. And if he's an old pine bench, then she's an old wing chair. It's not fair how we see you. So old wives and old husbands, and old women and old men, we've been together for a lifetime, be together till the end. We'll repeat. Been together for a lifetime, be together till the end.
That's it.
Yeah.
That was delightful.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.